And even the song we sang just before the message talked about the wonder that we see all around us. And I want to talk today about wonder, the wonder that we see in the creation, all that's all around us, our own human bodies, our universe. There's a lot of wonder to see. Modern science has revealed a universe of absolute wonder. Wonder in the sense of awe, astonishment, surprise, and admiration. We see wonder as we look at how the universe was created, how it is designed just right for life, and the incredible complexity of even the simplest life forms. Each year brings new scientific evidence of wonder. Facts for which there are essentially no explanations without God, no believable way around the wonder. Today I'm going to be reading a number of quotes from several different people out of this book. It's called Counting to God. This was the subtitle on here says, A Personal Journey Through Science to Belief, written by a gentleman named Douglas L., and that's spelled E-L-L. I don't know if we should call him Dr. L. or not, but he does have double degrees in math and physics, and it was that study of those topics that actually led him to come to a very solid belief in the God of this universe. Today I want to talk about four topics that Dr. L. covers in this book, and he actually covers seven, so if you want to read the full seven, pick up the book. I kind of condensed it down a bit to make it fit into a sermon message. It would probably be more like an hour and a half if we tried to do all seven of these, but I've tried to condense it a little bit so we can cover what I thought was the important points for us. And here are the four things that we're going to discuss today. The universe had a beginning and has been fine-tuned for life. The laws of physics are actually tuned to support life. Number two, life is a miracle. The simplest organisms contain staggering complexity. Number three, the technology of life is amazing. All life runs on the same operating system, something called DNA. And number four, our Earth is special. We'll talk about how the Earth and how this solar system is special. Let's start with the first one, which for many of us may seem a funny thing to talk about, is that the universe had a beginning, because for the longest time, from Aristotle's days in 300s BCs to Sir Isaac Newton in the 1700s, the prevalent understanding was that this universe had always existed, that it was infinite and eternal. There was no idea of any creation of anything as far as the universe was concerned. Following this, Albert Einstein came up with a way to explain how gravitational fields could have an effect on space and time. This was a major paradigm shift, and so many people, and he points out in here, that this came from a person who was outside of the paradigm of science at that day. He was working at a train station or something. I forget the exact job that he had, but he was not a scientist. This major paradigm shift in the way the world was understood took 45 years for the scientific community to fully accept. So up until, this was 1915 when Einstein proposed this theory of relativity and also special relativity, but even up until the 1950s, scientists were performing experiments based on the old understanding of the universe. The great debate that had raged for centuries is over whether all that we see around us just happened by chance or whether it was created by an intelligent designer. Of course, we know the answer, and some may think this is a simplistic answer, but we're going to give you some information to back it up. And that's Genesis 1, verse 1. Something that I saw a video snip of a Charlie Kirk event where he called this one of the absolute truths in the Bible. Genesis 1, verse 1, we all know, in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. Now, many hold on to the theories of Darwin, that life just evolved by chance, that time and the process of natural selection have produced everything around us, everything we see. Dr. L. calls this the religion of scientism, because it is a religion. It is a belief mechanism by which modern scientists and modern philosophers try to explain away the existence of a God. Let me read you just real briefly what he defines this term as scientism. Scientism puts a box around science and says you can't look outside the box for truth. Even when you ask why the stuff in the box is there or how it came to be. According to scientism, the box is the box is the box. There is nothing else. There are no truths other than the truths of science. So that is the way they get around all the things that we can see that are not really explainable without a God. Let me read a quote, another quote from the book, where he talks about this prevailing philosophy that's still, I think, very prevalent in the world today. This was written in 2014. So some of the information is dated. Just think of what we've discovered since he wrote this book 10 years ago. Here's what he writes. Other than a few religious institutions, it is generally impossible for a person who publicly challenges Darwin's theories to become a tenured professor. The popular press, who you might hope if they truly understood the subject, would embrace freedom of choice and wonder, has instead viciously mocked proponents of design in the universe. A federal court actually ruled that it violates the Constitution of the United States when a local school board informs high school students that intelligent design is an alternative to Darwin's theory of evolution by natural selection, end quote. And then going on, he goes on to write this about kind of sort of giving a understanding of how they proceed with intelligent design, how they make this study. He says this, intelligent design studies biological systems for signs of intelligence. It does this largely by measuring the probability that biological systems could ever have been formed by accident. That's where the math comes in. That's where his background in math really helped him. Scientism mocks the idea of intelligent design, yet at the same time supports SETI, which is the search for extraterrestrial intelligence. They are looking for life in the universe by doing what? Looking for patterns. Looking for patterns and signals coming from space. Archaeology also uses our ability to recognize complexity and see that as design. A common example that I know many have heard is if you came upon a watch on the side of the road, you would not think that it was just randomly created over billions of years, that somehow the glass and the second hand and the gears inside of it, the metal, all just gradually made itself into a watch. Or if you came upon a set of stairs as you're digging down into the ground at, let's say, an archaeological dig, you would not think to yourself, wow, how long did it take for all those stairs to magically form into this pattern that they're in? Or most of us would think, who made those stairs? Wouldn't we? We think those things were designed and put there for a reason. It wasn't until 1965, and this is amazing to me, that our modern science actually caught up with Genesis 1, verse 1. Two scientists who were doing an experiment, their names were Arno Penzias and Robert Wilson. We have an observatory named after him in California. They were doing an experiment to find a certain kind of radiation signal. And they could not find it. They thought, what's wrong with our... And they had built this elaborate antenna to find this signal they were looking for. And they kept having this interference, they thought. Well, gradually they finally figured out that what they had found was what they now call cosmic microwave background radiation, a signal, a relic from the creation of the universe. This was the first solid discovery that pointed to the fact that the universe had a beginning. They were awarded the Nobel Prize in Physics in 1978. So that was, what, another 13 years after that discovery. As our technologies have advanced and our abilities to look out into the universe, we can see that there is movement in the universe, that things are moving away from us at tremendous speeds. This points to a beginning, to a starting point of our universe. Another thing that has been discovered by our scientists is that our universe has constants, laws, the laws of physics, that have been finely tuned to support life. In the book, he quotes a list of 31 laws of physics that just happen to be tuned to support life. Quoting again from the book, Douglas L. writes, "As far as we know, the 31 or so fundamental constants of physics that have been set just right for the life are unrelated." So it's not as though you can say, well, this must have all been happening at the same time, or, you know, these laws are similar to each other, that it's just these just happen to be there. No, they're all unrelated. There is no reason to think that any one of them can be calculated from any of the others. Yet somehow they're all just perfectly right. And the analogy they give is of walking into a control room for the universe and finding that all the dials had been set precisely for life. You would not think that it was a happy accident. End quote. So that covers point one, that this universe had a beginning. And we only just recently have found the science behind proving that. Let's move on to the miracle of life. The miracle of life. Out of 500 different types of amino acids, all life uses the same 20 different amino acids to build the cells needed for life. This includes the ability to properly link the amino acids together into proteins, to store the code of life and the information to assemble all of these atoms into the right three-dimensional shape and the right order. Scientists have no explanation for how this came to be. Eugene Koonin, a recognized expert in the field of evolutionary and computational biology, wrote this in a 2011 status report. Again, quoting from Counting to God and his status report. Quote, "Despite many interesting results to its credit, When judged by the straightforward criterion of reaching or even approaching the ultimate goal, the origin of life field is a failure. We still do not have even a plausible, coherent model, let alone a validated scenario for the emergence of life on Earth. Once again, you and I were given a cheat sheet on this very thing, Genesis 1, verse 11. Some may see this as simplistic, but now we have the data to back this up. Then God said, "Let the earth bring forth grass, the herb that yields seed, the fruit tree that yields fruit according to its kind, whose seed is in itself, on the earth." And it was so. And drop down to verse 20. And then God said, "Let the waters abound with an abundance of living creatures, and the birds fly above the earth across the face of the firmament of the heavens." So God created great sea creatures and every living thing that moves, with which the waters abounded according to their kind, and every winged bird according to its kind. And God saw that it was good. And God blessed them, saying, "Be fruitful and multiply and fill the waters and the seas, and let the birds multiply on the earth." And I hope that, I know this is probably maybe a more of a technical message, but I hope that it can give you perhaps some information to give to other people when they start, they try to downplay your belief in a God that created everything. Again, quoting from the book Counting to God, where he talks about this wonderful detail and the complexity that God created in this world. "Yet when you stop to ponder exactly what life is and how it works, you begin to realize how precious life is. From the perspective of engineering alone, life is an amazing chemical machine. It is a chemical machine that possesses the ability to reproduce, to make copies of itself, to make other machines of the same type. That is astounding. As advanced as our science and technology are, we human beings are not even close to building a different kind of chemical machine that can reproduce without assistance. Sure, we can tweak existing forms of life to enhance crop yields or obtain other benefits, but that is just a relatively slight modification to an existing form of life, an existing chemical machine. We do not have the ability to create from scratch a new design for a chemical machine that can reproduce. We are not even close to having that ability." End quote. Now, back then, he didn't know Elon Musk, or maybe he knew him but didn't realize what he would go on to do. Whereas now, Elon is saying that the robots that he's developing will be able to reproduce themselves. Now, it's not a chemical machine. It's a physical device made out of metal and plastic and circuits. But he claims that only the first generation will be built by humans. The second generation will be built by themselves, by robots. We'll see if he can bring that to pass. But God brought to pass something they can't even explain or duplicate today with all of our modern technology. One of the simplest forms of life that is known to us is blue-green algae. Yes, something as simple as what grows on a rock in a stream, one of the most simple forms of life, yet God put amazing complexity into blue-green algae. Let's look at some of the things God designed into this. It can use photosynthesis as well as being able to convert nitrogen into organic compounds, which allows it to enter a sterile environment and start growing. They average about 2,000 genes and a relatively small genome of 1.6 million letters of DNA. So just the blue-green algae that you find maybe floating in the ocean or on a rock in a stream, is 1.6 million letters of DNA. Each of the 2,000 genes contains the code for building a specific protein. The odds of this happening randomly, by accident, are extremely low. And at the end, I'll give you some of those numbers for those of you that are inclined to want to know the math behind some of these claims. As science discovers and documents these miracles of life around us, it becomes increasingly impossible to believe in evolution. The fact is, it takes greater faith to believe the Darwinian theories about the origin of life than in a creator God. And yes, it is a faith. It is a faith to believe in Darwin's theories. It is a faith to believe that there is no God. And there is a faith that we all share that believes in a God that has the power to create all that we see with the incredible complexity that I feel we're not even beginning to fully understand. Before the incredible advances of technology we have, and we're now 10 years beyond the writing of this book, the scientists were not able to really see what was inside the human body. They just called it protoplasm. They just thought we had this jelly-like goo, as they called it, that did all of life's work. Now we know that the body has 30 trillion cells. I've heard recently it's now up to 50 trillion. I don't know if there's some new research that's come about that discovered we have more than they thought, but even at 30 trillion, that's a lot. And every one of those cells is like a complex three-dimensional city with libraries, factories, and highways. And I'd like to read another quote, Dr. L is quoting from another biologist named Michael Denton. But I'll try to do justice to this description. I wish I could put up something on the screen to show you this, because it would probably be incredible to see it in a digital form. But he talks about the design of every cell that exists in our bodies. To grasp the reality of life as it has been revealed by molecular biology. And they're now able to see this because of technology. He goes on, we must magnify a cell 1,000 million times until it is 20 kilometers in diameter and resembles a giant airship large enough to cover a great city like London or New York. What would we then see at that magnification? Would be an object of unparalleled complexity and adaptive design. On the surface of the cell, we would see millions of openings, like portholes of a vast spaceship, opening and closing to allow a continual stream of materials to flow in and out. If we were to enter one of these openings, we would find ourselves in a world of supreme technology and bewildering complexity. We would see endless, highly organized corridors and conduits branching in every direction, away from the perimeter of the cell, some leading to the central memory bank in the nucleus, and others to assembly plants and processing units. The nucleus itself would be a vast spherical chamber, more than a kilometer in diameter, resembling a geodesic dome inside of which we would see all neatly stacked together in ordered arrays, the miles of coiled chains of the DNA molecules, a huge range of products and raw materials would shuttle along all the manifold conduits in a highly ordered fashion to and from the various assembly plants in the outer regions of the cell. That's the description of one of the 30 trillion cells that exist in our bodies. Incredible complexity. Another fact that he brings out, which I think really flies in the face of Darwin's theories, is that all of life runs on the same digital operating system. This will be good for the geeks that are in the room, the computer people like myself. All of life runs on the same digital operating system. It stores its code in long molecules of DNA and has machines that transfer or transcribe the DNA information to a slightly smaller molecule called RNA. I think all of us are familiar with RNA today when we have the technology of mRNA or modified RNA being used by many of the medical professions today. This operating system of life, and we could call it, instead of, you know, today we have all these various versions of operating systems. You have Mac OS, you have Windows, you have iOS on your phones. It's going up to, I think, now 26 version. We would have something called DNA OS, version 1. That's the only version, perfect from the time that it was created by God. A piece of DNA from a human cell can be inserted. Now, this is an amazing fact. A piece of DNA can be inserted from us, from one of our cells, into a bacteria's cell, and the information will be successfully read, and vice versa. You can take some DNA out of another organism, a bacteria, insert it into a human being, and our molecular machines will be able to read it. It has the same form and is read the same way for all of life. How does that evolve? How do you not have a million different versions of DNA if that was the way all this happened, if evolution was the way all this happened? DNA itself is a miracle. It is an incredible storage technology. It is incredibly small, as it is written with groups of atoms. A single gram of DNA can hold 700 terabytes of data. That's a lot of data. I could tell you that. I mean, we start to worry if we build a server that has more than 2 terabytes of data attached to it. It becomes very hard to manage. A spoonful of DNA, so imagine a teaspoon of DNA, it can store the complete instructions for every species that has ever existed, with enough room left over to store every book ever written. That's a spoonful of DNA. Let's read another quote from Counting to God about DNA. Quote, your DNA is the code used to build you. It takes a lot of DNA to build a human being. About 3.2 billion subunits or letters of DNA. Remember the blue-green algae, I think, was 1.6 million. So we're talking quite a bit more DNA for us. Going back to the quote, almost every one of the 30 trillion cells in your body has 46 chromosomes, linked end to end like an impossibly long series of plastic connecting blocks. The more detail you study about this technology, the more amazing it becomes. DNA has the following, what we'll call, technologies built in. And we have some of these same technologies. Man has created some of these same things in computers, in computer world. DNA uses technologies for information retrieval. For splicing, it is able to splice different strands of DNA together. Molecular delivery trucks. It has a four-letter genetic code. It has information compression technology built in, so it's able to compress the DNA. It has shredding technology, so it can get rid of bad pieces of DNA or RNA that need to be destroyed, that are worn out or aged out, they get destroyed. It has replication technology, what we would call in the computer parlance, backup technology. We always like to keep our servers backed up. and it has repair technology. When a strand of DNA is being created, there's actually a machine that runs along the strand of DNA proofreading it. And it's able to proofread it to where it can get 99 out of 100 errors corrected out of a strand of DNA. All of this technology built in. We get to the complex, or the concept of irreducible complexity, which I'm sure many have heard when we talk about this topic, where you have things that have to be there at the same time. You have systems that have to exist together, or else they will not be able to exist. And so that questions the ability for evolution to create some of these things. Let's look at one of them. One of the examples used in the book is of a bacterial, what's called a bacterial flagellum. And that's a propeller that is on some bacteria that exist. The example was of an E. coli. So you look at, you take a microscope and you look at an E. coli bacteria, and you see that it has an engine built onto it to allow it to move around. It is a rotary engine with up to a 10,000 RPM speed. A variety of parts to build that engine requires 30 to 40 genes to build. If you take away any one of those genes, the engine can't be built. It does not work. In 2013, scientists discovered another species of bacteria with the same molecular propeller on it, but this was even more complex. This consisted of 7 coordinated motors in a hexagonal array separated by gear wheels. So imagine that. God placed that much complexity down to the microscopic level of a, quote, what we are calling an engine on a piece of bacteria, a tiny, tiny piece of bacteria. Again, what is the possibilities that all of this happened by chance? That some random combination of amino acids and some kind of primordial soup just happened to come together, the exact 20 amino acids happened to come together in just the right order, in just the right three-dimensional array to begin the process of creating life. Let's move on to the fourth topic, which is our Earth and our universe, our solar system, are special. In March 2009, the United States launched a space observatory, and the purpose of this was to look for other planets. The idea behind this was that they didn't feel that our Earth was that special, and that surely there had to be more Earth-like planets that they could find to show that, okay, you know, it's not that special that we have this planet. There's like 20 other possible Earths out there, let's say. But then, as they studied it more and more, they began to realize how special this Earth is. Our sun is in the part of the galaxy best suited for life. They call this the GHZ. Technologists are really good at coming up with acronyms, you'll find. This one stands for the Galactic Habitable Zone. So our star just happens to be in the right place for that. The sun is just the right size. It's big, but not too big. A bigger star would burn out faster. Only about 10% of the stars that they have discovered have the right mass for life. Estimates, and I don't know how they make these estimates, are that our sun has about 5 billion years of relative stability left. I'm sure we'll be just fine. We have plenty of time. Our solar system is special because of the orbits of all the planets. The orbits are fairly circular and spaced apart to reduce interference. If they were too close together, we would have more gravitational problems on the different planets. Jupiter and the other outer planets are set in a way that protect our planet from wayward objects hitting us. And just to show how important that is, I'd like to read another quote. I didn't put it in my notes, but I'd like to read just a quote of what happened when an object did get through to our planet. And this happened actually back in 1908, which I don't remember ever reading about this until I saw it in this book. On June 30th of 1908, a meteorite, only 100 meters in diameter, so 100 meters, exploded in the atmosphere above Siberia. The blast was about 1,000 times more powerful than the atomic bomb dropped on Hiroshima. An estimated 80 million trees, over 803 square miles, were destroyed. It remains the largest impact event in recorded history. That's just a meteorite of 100 meters. Just imagine anything larger than that getting through to the Earth. The Earth is in the inner edge of what is known as the solar habitable zone, another abbreviation, I'm sure, where liquid water can exist. It's very important if you think about it. You know, some of the other planets they've looked at out there are at a distance where they're mainly frozen. They don't have the ability to have liquid water. Where the Earth is located, we have the ability to have liquid water. Its orbit falls within the zone where the temperature is always right for the existence of water. Our moon is very unusual. It's the largest moon in the solar system. The moon keeps the axis of Earth's rotation at about the same angle to its orbit around the sun, and it prevents Jupiter from causing large changes in the tilt of the Earth's axis. It provides tides as it orbits around the Earth. It's easy to see that if you're at the beach. If you're on the beach, you see the water coming in and going back out. That's the result of the moon. And I didn't realize this either, even solid ground has tide swings of about 8 inches. I'd never heard that before. But even solid ground can be affected by the pull of the moon as the moon passes overhead. Quoting again from the book Counting to God, quote, "When you add it all up, I think the evidence is strong that our Earth is rare. The Earth is in the right galaxy, is located the right distance from the center of the galaxy. It travels a safe path through the galaxy, has the right sun, is in the right solar system, in the right place, and has the right moon. Do we think all of this was by chance?" Let's go to the book of Job. Let's go to the book of Job. Job 38. Job 38, God's talking to Job and asking him some questions and showing us that he was the one who said all of these things and made all these things right. Job 38, verse 4, "Where were you when I laid the foundations of the earth? Tell me, if you have understanding, who determined its measurements? Surely you know. Or who stretched a line upon it? To what were its foundations fastened? Or who laid its cornerstone?" Dropping down to verse 31. "Can you bind the cluster of Pleiades, or loose the belt of Orion? Can you bring out Maseroth in its season? Or can you guide the great bear with its cubs? Do you know the ordinances of the heavens? Can you set their dominion over earth? We now know that God set those ordinances. He set those laws just right for this planet to exist. He was the one who established the earth and the surrounding universe. He has set the ordinances of the heavens, created the laws that govern the movement of the stars, the laws of physics, as we talked about earlier, fine-tuned for existence of life. Let's talk about probabilities. This is for those of you that want to maybe have some of the math behind some of the equations discussed in the book. For the fine-tuning of the universe that we just talked about, the probability of this happening is 1 followed by 10 to the 123 power. That's the probability of that happening. The likelihood of life arising by chance, that's 1 in 10 with a 100 billionth power. 1 in 10 to the 100 billionth power is the probability of that ever happening. The odds of getting a specified sequence of 100 amino acids. That's 100 amino acids. It takes 20 to build a single protein, so you're talking 5 proteins. The number is 1 in 10 to the 230th power. It's a lot of zeros after that. And he gives an example for this one, kind of a thought experiment for kind of visualizing this number. He says, consider a ball extending 25 trillion miles from Earth in all directions. Pretty large ball. Reaching the nearest star, actually. And in that ball is packed marbles, 1/2 inch in diameter. Imagine hidden somewhere in that immense ball is a special marked marble that you need to find. That's the number of marbles is 5 × 10^55 marbles. So your chances of blindly picking that special marble out of that huge ball are trillions and trillions of times more likely than getting a specified sequence of 100 amino acids. And we know the likelihood of finding that one special marble is impossible. We have seen the wonders that God has done in his creative genius through the eyes of science. The advances in our ability to see what God has done in creating life all the way down to the cellular level. And even now, even further, we're talking about quantum physics now. Down to the design and the language of DNA should make us stand in awe of our Creator. These recent discoveries are just the tip of the iceberg, as in every aspect of the world around us. We see the magnificent intellectual power of God, the incredible design that was put into every single aspect of the universe, down to an engine on a piece of bacteria. God is the first and only cause for this universe that we inhabit and this planet that we enjoy. Let's conclude with a scripture out of Nehemiah today. Nehemiah chapter 9 and verse 6. Nehemiah 9, 6. You alone are the Lord. You have made heaven, the heaven of heavens with all their host, the earth and everything on it, the seas and all that is in them, and you preserve them all. The host of heaven worships you.